Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Weiner, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And as always, I have a question for you. What does it mean to pray like a hypocrite? And if we're honest, I mean, how often is prayer something we have to endure? How often do our minds wander? And how often does prayer make us uncomfortable? I mean, we've seen prayers so long and verbose that they have sermons contained within them. We see demonstrative prayers standing in circles around restaurants or flagpoles or bowing on blankets in airports or even threatening us with loudspeakers in public events. I mean, to who are such prayers directed? God? Really? Or is it everyone else? You see, Jesus calls that hypocrisy. In today's post and podcast, we continue Jesus' deconstruction of religious acts of righteousness, and we see beyond praying as performance. Join me now as once again we enter the hidden place where God dwells, but religion can never come. Hello, everybody, and thanks so much for coming back to yet another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Weiner. I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach. So glad to have you with me. Welcome to today's broadcast, and thank you for all you new folks signing up for the podcast, all you folks signing up for Winder's Windshield. So glad to have you tuning into this weekly newsletter where great, helpful, inspiring content can come to you. You don't have to go to it. Yeah, it opens up your whole Sunday, doesn't it? Makes you have time to go do the things you really want to do without forsaking sacred space. And today we are going to talk about sacred space. This is podcast number 199, and it's called Praying, Not Performing. And if you tuned in the series so far, we're well into the series on the Sermon on the Mount. We're in chapter 6 now, and today is kind of part 2 of chapter 6. There's three sections that are going to go together about religious performance. And boy, isn't that something that we've all had to deal with. I mean, I think a lot of people really have turned away from world religions of all denominations and kinds simply because religion is really, really enamored and impressed with the container itself. Oh, the big buildings and the fancy robes, the incense, the candles, the lighting, the music, the parade, the performance of talking, singing, and all that goes in the middle. It's all designed to kind of point us and lead us and inspire us towards our spiritual journey, our place with God. But so often we just get buried into the politics, into the programs, and into everything else. And we find ourselves busy, distracted, and plugged into the container all along while we miss the contents, the goal of the whole thing. And so this is really a big issue. And I know some of you are still a little sore from last week when I really deconstructed and pressed hard on our love affair with the buildings, the church, the money, the system, the container. And yeah, I get it. I know some of you feel like I was a bit harsh. But really, is my commentary really that harsh by comparison to what Jesus was saying about ancient Judaism and the temple and the parade and the pomp and circumstances surrounding that? I think it's very much in alignment with what we're seeing today in the modern church, in modern religion, as they get bigger and more powerful and more verbose and more demonstrative. I think we have to really look at this. And so let's continue our series in podcast number 199. That's right. Next week will be a special edition 200th episode. But today it's 199, Praying, Not Performing. And like I mentioned earlier, we're in this series, and we arrive at the second of three sections that go together, which really explain the meaning of the fourth beatitude. So if you're not familiar with the Sermon on the Mount, it starts off with the Beatitudes. And that's actually like an index. It's like a little section that says, okay, this is what we're going to talk about, and this is how you're going to have spiritual happiness, makarios. And then he goes on and explains how those things work through the rest of the sermon, you know, chapters 5 through 7. And so it's called a chiastic structure, which means a cross or an X. And that's how oral tradition taught back then. And so Jesus' sermon explains this kind of fortune cookie, which is what the Beatitudes are. They're kind of like little fortune cookie statements. And the one that he's talking about today is the blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be satisfied. Okay. And he does this by explaining, and then this is what we're looking at over the last week today and the next week, or actually in 2 weeks from now when we get past our 200th episode. He's looking at these three acts of righteousness. So you know these go together, right? Giving, praying, and fasting. Last week we looked at giving. If you aren't familiar with that, go back and check it out and put your floaties on, because I'm going to take you to the deep end. Today we're going to look at praying. And I know many of you shared with me how last week's podcast was a bit severe, but I hope that it doesn't dissuade you from hearing these words. You see, sometimes we need deconstruction. And this is one of those times. Contemporary churchianity has really gone off the rails in a similar way that ancient Judaism and Jesus' words were likely very hard to hear. I mean, just think about how they had to have heard that, to have the people in the synagogue, the teachers, the religious people, doing all the things that they love to do in their religion, giving and praying and fasting and all these kinds of things. And he's saying they're all acting like hypocrites. Now think about that. Isn't that the critique the world gives most mainline religions in the world today? Religious people are acting like hypocrites. And Jesus is clearly deconstructing organized religion. And he's steering people into a private faith. And that's what we're trying to do today. And I know some of you, that rubs against you the wrong way. Try and hear the words. See what Jesus was saying. Imagine what it would be like to hear these and at the time. And here are the words from Matthew chapter 6. He says, "And when you pray, you must not be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and at the street corners, and this so that they may be seen by others. Truly, I say to you, they've received their reward. But when you pray, go into your room and shut the door and pray to your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. And when you pray, don't heap up empty phrases as the Gentiles do, for they think that they're going to be heard for their many words. Don't be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you even ask him. So pray then like this: Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For if you forgive their trespasses, your heavenly Father will forgive you. But if you don't forgive their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive you your trespasses." Now, that's a little long of a passage compared to what we've seen later, but this is really important. And I'm going to break it all down. But immediately we see the same framework as we saw last week with the giving, right? In the same way, the focus of righteousness cannot be about performance or looking good in front of others, praying as an external display diminishes the whole point. This should beg the question as to how Christians and other religions approach public prayer, whether it be in a corporate worship setting or you're standing around in a circle at a restaurant, everybody has to hold hands, right? Or on a blanket facing east, right? I get it. It's part of your religious structure. But it's a public display. And what's the purpose of it? Is it drawing attention to yourself or to your religion? Now, I'm not saying that you can't do these public displays or that they are all across the board inappropriate. What I'm saying is that if you do the public display and you do not enter the secret, deep, inner place, but you're bowing your head, looking, kind of waiting for this thing to finish, then that is hypocrisy. If you go through the motions and you throw down your prayer cloth and you bow towards the east and you do your prayers, but you're really only doing them because you want to appear more holy than the person who's not bowing. And you kind of feel a sense of pride because your family bowed their head in prayer at the steakhouse, you know, and everybody else didn't. If you're in that space, you are not in the deep place of prayer. You are in a place of hypocrisy. See, the subject of prayer should really open us the deeper questions and examine our practices, don't you think? I mean, do we really need someone to lead everyone in a group prayer? Jesus seems to be saying no. See, your Father knows what you need before you ask Him. This means that praying isn't so much about our words or even our gestures as it is about something else, something hidden. That's the word crypto, or where we get our word crypto. You see, it's also that praying out loud isn't necessary in order to be heard or understand by God. Praying needs no words at all. And for some of you, that is probably hard to figure out right now. You may not have ever experienced prayer with no words, but try it sometime. Praying is for our benefit and those around us. Corporate prayer can bring unity of mind, but most of the time it doesn't. I mean, how often is our mind just wandering when someone else is praying? I mean, have you ever been in one of those church services where the pastor in his closing prayer basically repeats the 7 points that he did in his sermon? Have you ever sat there listening to somebody come up and offer a prayer and it was so awkward and uncomfortable that you were looking around at other people around you? You were not focused. Yes, I get it. This is reality. How often are we just going through the motions rather than going to that deep place? See, if so, this is just another form of performance. Prayer is performance art for most of us, to be seen by others, and that misses the entire point of prayer. See, the promise of the Beatitude is that we're going to be satisfied. And this passage seems to be saying that if we draw attention to ourselves and our prayer, the only satisfaction we're going to gain is the approval of others. And most often in our culture, the disapproval of others, right? When Jesus says they have received their reward. I mean, how many prayers requests have you heard that were never answered? Oh, we're going to pray for the healing of this person and then they die. We're going to ask that God helps this person with their financial situation and then they lose their house and have to move away. Isn't the point of asking an all-powerful God for his attendance to our needs the hope that such needs will be met? And I know there's scripture talks about a lot of reasons why our prayers aren't answered, and we're not going to talk really about that today. I can certainly answer questions about it if you want to write me. But perhaps we've missed something because we think our prayers function like coins in a theological vending machine. I'm going to put in this prayer. This is what we've prayed every day, every Sunday in our liturgy for the last 752 years. So this is the prayer. We're not altering it. We're not changing it. This is the prayer. Satisfaction, though, is when it's enough that God sees. It's enough to just join God in the moment. And I'm not saying you can't do that through some rote liturgical framework prayer, but you're going to need a lot more to get yourself into that space. See, where is this kryptoi, this secret, hidden, dark place where God sees us? He blepos us, looks beyond the surface, right? What does this mean? Many, but not all modern people are beyond what we call pre-rational consciousness, which really in pre-rational consciousness is where we externalize God to this thing up there. You know, think of the third world indigenous people who see God as the sun or the moon or this external force out there, right? Most modern religions aren't that different. They're not even graduating beyond pre-rational consciousness in most ways, but most of our modern world has. And so they look at religion and they're like, why do you guys continue to see God as up there? We already know up there, there isn't anything but stars and space and atmosphere. Or where is the out there? Is it just keeps going beyond us? Or he's over there and he's looking down on us. It's always framed that way. And still religions and their buildings kind of presuppose this paradigm in their design. And notice how everything, all the architecture is upward, it's outward, it's vertical. And with the exception of some prayers or meditations or contemplative practices, there is very little in modern religion that is inward. And as I showed last week, we don't need a building, a budget, or an organized program to go inward. Yet this is where all of our dollars go. Everything you're working towards, giving towards, and supporting is all on this outward display, the building, the program, paying a hired hand to teach you what you already know, right? You don't need a staff member, a pastor, to teach you this, right? This is Jesus' whole point. This is why I was so severe last week in breaking all that down. That's all content. That's all container, not contents. You see, inward and private is the trajectory Jesus is advocating for. This conversation is all about going inward and being private, right? And Paul says in Romans 14 that our faith should be between ourselves and God. He's not advocating for big, loud religion either. And so what do we find when we go into this secret place? What is this all about? What is the secret hiding place, the kryptoi? See, what we find is that we find ourselves when we get in there, or at least an echo of our true self. Now, is it possible to differentiate between true prayer and talking to oneself? Now, think about this carefully. It's not an easy answer. Remember, John Calvin, a great Reformed theologian, and many other theologians and philosophers have come to this conclusion that the discovery of God and the discovery of oneself are indistinguishable. They are inseparable from one another. Now, I'm not saying that we are God. I'm saying that the discovery of one cannot be done without the discovery of the other. So could Jesus be suggesting that the satisfaction of the soul is to finally find your true self, as Kierkegaard would say, transparently grounded in God? Is not the reward, the spiritual progress, the makarios that we saw in the Beatitudes, that word happy, blessed, right? Isn't that reward, the consciousness, the conscious awareness to observe one's thoughts and realize for even a brief moment that the observer of the thought cannot be the same as the thinker of the thought? See, in this moment where words have no value, they have no purpose, they have no power, the reward is the presence of being. The reward is God Himself. Right? Just being, just abiding, just staying, not saying. See, Jesus alludes to this when he says, do not heap up empty phrases like the Gentiles do. And that word Gentiles is ethnikoi, where we get our word ethnic. It's the word for heathens, right? And so they were looking, as Jewish people, looking at mantras and other things. Many scholars believe that this refers to the mantras and the repetition of liturgies found in many religions. And Jesus' point is that within the privacy of your own mind, formulas and ritual are pointless. So instead, he says, go to our inner room. Close the door, the theron, the entrance. Close off the entrance. In other words, go into a private place away from everyone and close off the entrance. Create space for nothing to enter so that you can truly be alone, so that you can converge with your true self hidden in there with your Maker. Right? You need to cut out the distractions, lock them outside. That's the opposite of going to church, isn't it? Isn't church the most distracting place you've ever been? Think about that for a minute. How many of us would do well to just stay home on a Sunday and be quiet for even a half an hour? 20 minutes, 10 minutes, if your monkey mind can even tolerate that. Rather than go and be completely distracted and amped up and juiced up and sung up and energized and emotionalized for 2 hours plus traffic. How many of us would do well to deliberately just carve out space each day and sit still and say nothing and do nothing and just be with ourselves and our Maker right where we are? What would happen if we stopped running our mouths and the endless mantras of noise, talk, distraction that parades in our heads? I mean, no one can see it. It's the most spiritual thing in the world that we could do. Eastern religions call it meditation. Mystics of all kinds of religions call it contemplation and prayer. Psychology calls it stillness or downtime or self-reflection. But what if we stopped performing for some God or for those around us and just became still enough, quiet enough to join the eternal, present moment that's found itself right here, right now. Just be here now. Jesus offers a very simple framework for this. He's not giving us a new religion. He's not setting up a new alternative religion. No, the direction for what or how to pray is not simply to be rote memorization. It's a framework for reality, right? So when we're in our hidden place, there's no denying that a conversation is taking place. How many times do you find yourself talking to yourself? What you're actually doing is having a conversation, and you think it's you, but the conversation by default means you're talking with something. So you have like these two selves going on, the true self found transparently in God and your fake ID, as I always call it, the false self, the surface self and the deep self, right? All spirituality has different metaphors and ways of saying this. Our first assumption is that's us, that's our voice. Well, yeah, it is your voice, but is it you behind the voice? In fact, you're not alone. You see, our Maker is closer to us than we are to ourselves. This is why Jesus instructs us to recognize that our Father who is in heaven. You see, it's okay to have doubts, uncertainty. This is the secret place, and it's very unfamiliar to us. It's even hostile to our egoic pretenses, right? The secret place, the hidden place, is hostile to your ego, your pride. It gets shot down there. It has to die there. Otherwise, it sits there making noise and distracting and disrupting you from just being. See how hard it is to just be sometimes, and you'll see what I mean. So when you're there, pay respect, because what sounds like the voice in your head is actually there, but it isn't you. Recognize that you're joining the eternal moment, and that's what Jesus means, on earth as it is in heaven. See, notice any petitions or thoughts that take you away from the moment of being. Right, your mind's going to be wondering about lunch, or, oh, I got to go do this thing. Oh, that inspires me. I need to go write that down. Oh, I need to call somebody. I need to do something. Oh, I'm so angry about that. I'm so hurt about that. Oh, I just, all your emotions, all your thinking, all your to-do lists floods into your mind, distracting you, taking you away from this place. Let it all go. It's not time to do anything here. This is the secret place. Don't go with those thoughts. Just remain still. Just be. Surrender them. There's no time in the present moment. Everything just is. Don't try and form words around all the things that occur to you to say. Like, you know you want to ask for something and it comes to you. Don't form a word around it. Just let it be. Just immediately surrender it. Everything is already heard before you can say it within the moment. The eternal moment has no time. All, you know, a big articulated monologue gets you nowhere. All that ever was and all that ever will be is only right here, right now. The present and the presence are indistinguishable. Once we have the eyes to see the kingdom, this is the only place where we are able to join reality apart from time. Have you thought about that? I mean, we live in this framework of space-time, but here in the present moment, that doesn't last very long. This is where we join reality, ultimate reality, apart from time. It's hard to describe this, I'm telling you. Only the person who spent time on the mat kind of understands this. And we can't stay here very long, right? We know that our present reality is fixed within space-time. This is just a blip, a moment of us joining the eternal moment. But it's the hidden place. It's where we've always been and where we will always ultimately be. See, returning to this moment by being still, returning is reminding. It's rejoining. It's convergence once again. So being hidden in God and God hidden in us means that prayer is the jumping point. It's the portal through which we move between our lives and space-time and the eternally present moment. Prayer is the convergence of where your life and your God meet. See, in between, we need help. We need reminders. We need protection. We need to make sure we're not tempted and distracted by the noise or the anesthesia of everyday life. This is why Jesus is just saying, ask that we're not led into temptation and please deliver us from evil. See, trying to write about the secret place that we possess is a real struggle, trust me. And accessing it is not any easier. It wasn't easy then, nor is it now. Our language is different, but the essence is still the same. It all comes together in this unique horizontal application. So Jesus has kind of given this framework for what's going on this internal place. And then he just ends with this little paragraph, and he just says it's all about really forgiveness. And so much of modern religion turns this into a huge threat, and it turns it into a new way of leveraging behavior modification so that you get these trite forgivenesses. Oh, I forgive them. But it's not really forgiveness out of love. It's just this external attempt at forgiveness. You see, when he says, you know, you have to forgive those who have trespassed against you, or your heavenly Father will not forgive your trespasses against you. See, we know we've accessed the secret place in God when we can forgive reality for being what it is. Can you forgive traffic for being what it is? Or is it just always people in your way? Can you forgive the person who doesn't understand everything as well as you? For just being more simple or not having the bandwidth that you do? Or is it that you just have to see them as stupid? See, forgiving others for being imperfect or flawed or confused or disoriented and lacking truth, it means that we see this reality within ourselves, because you know that you yourself are imperfect and flawed and often confused and disoriented, and you too lack total truth. See, only that which isn't us can show us this. See, if we see our failings and our frailty and we realize we need a pass, right? We need some grace. If you know that about yourself, then it's incumbent upon each of us to give others a pass and offer that to them, to give them some grace. The evidence that our prayers are heard and attended is our very ability to forgive reality for being what it is, to forgive others for being what they are, because we realize that's kind of how we are. We're not that different. See, once we see that this is a deliberate, conscious act, then we realize that something other than us is actually prompting our gestures of goodness to others. Because think about it, unforgiveness is our default mode. Otherness is the disease of low consciousness. We always grow up in this binary of that person is not me, and I'm not them. You know, those people, that different religion, that different tribe, that different team, right? We can't be released ourselves until we release others, until we start saying, yeah, I'm not you and you're not me. But then this other thing jumps in here. It says, but I'm also not other than you either. When you look at the football team on the field, yeah, your team's in a green jersey and theirs is in a blue jersey. But for some reason, you hate them. And they're more like you and your team than anybody else on the field, right? You're not them and they're not you, but you're really not other than each other either. See, that's that third thing that comes in. This is why we can't be released ourselves until we release others. This is why Jesus said, neither will your Father forgive your trespasses. And like I said earlier, this is not a threat as much as it is a statement of interconnectedness. Think about this. Reprogram this phrase in your head. It is not a threat. It is about our interconnectedness. You see, forgiveness means you are free to converge and love others as yourself. The wordless conversation in the secret place helps us to rise above our instincts and our competition. Loving the unlovable means that we were not alone in the secret place. It's not just in your head. You're not just making it up. A transformation is taking place that's allowing you to be loving. That didn't come from you. It can't come from you. See, it can only come from a maker whose very nature is love itself. Right? Because every soul that has ever existed is also joined with you in the secret place. You can't join the maker of all, the Father, creator of all that there is, and not join every soul that ever existed. It's impossible. And in the same way, they can't be divorced from God, neither can you. And so there's this place that allows this forgiveness of the trespass to emerge, because you recognize I am one of the many who is the benefactor of this love of God, this place. That's where religion needs to be taking us, but it can't come in there, can it? Because religion wants to put words around it, a structure around it, a framework around it. It wants to judge what's good and bad, what's valid, what's invalid, whose prayer is better and whose isn't, and what needs to be included, what needs to be excluded, right? It wants to purify everything. It wants to clean everything up. This place is messy. The secret place is honest. It's real. It's everything you think you are and everything you have yet to become. So if we learn to live from our secret place, the sacred space of heaven, then the kingdom of God has come to us. That's the whole point. It's a place where religion can never enter. Can heaven really be as easy as this? The myriad of people who know the hidden place resoundingly say, yes, it can.